This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Most people think of heart disease as something that middle-aged or older adults have to worry about, but it can impact children as well. For some children, heart disease is the result of a congenital defect or a problem brought on by an infection. And with today's obesity epidemic, children are presenting with other conditions that used to be seen only in adults: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and, yes, heart disease and stroke. But advances in early diagnosis and treatment mean more children today can live longer, healthier lives. And we're going to talk about that this hour. Dr. Benjamin Peeler is Chief of Pediatric Cardiothoracic Surgery at Levine Children's Hospital. He is here with Dr. Jorge Alegria, a cardiologist with Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute, who specializes in caring for adults who have cardiac issues that were discovered while they were children. Dr. David Price is Medical Director of Heart of a Champion Day. That's a free athletic screening in the Charlotte area, which helps discover conditions in young athletes that could result in sudden cardiac death during competition. We'll talk a lot about that later in the program. And for the first time ever on this program, a Carolina Panther is here. Greg Olson, who has become active in bringing attention to pediatric cardiology issues following his son's surgery. Thank you all for being here. Good morning and welcome.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
We're not going to talk about Steve Smith today, are we?
That's up to you. It's okay. Your show.
Heart disease in children, is it more commonly caused by congenital heart defects or with this problem that we have in the country with obesity? Is the number of children presenting with heart problems increasing because of those reasons as opposed to congenital problems? I'm not sure who to ask that question of.
Well, we can all probably take a stab at it. Congenital heart defects are by far the most common reason for children to have heart disease. Certainly, childhood obesity is increasing, and it's becoming an increasingly important problem in America. And Dr. Alegria can probably comment that on that better, but congenital heart defects are by far the most common cause of heart disease in children.
Well, that's correct. I think congenital heart defects, you know, can be discovered early in childhood or later in life, too. And but congenital heart defects will be also influenced by the lifestyle choices of the children. So obesity will be important in their case, too.
How would you characterize this increase in obesity and the problems that result from it, be it high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, stroke? How would you characterize it? Is it an epidemic? Is it something less than that? What is it?
Well, I think it's a serious epidemic. I think if we don't change by 2030, probably one in two in America will be obese. And it's not only that, it's the suffering, it's the, medical illness. So, and the beauty is that we can prevent it, with healthy cardiovascular lifestyle. Mm-hmm.
In the case of children who are born with heart defects or who succumb to an illness that causes them to have a heart problem, at what stage is that generally detected? After birth, before birth, at age three, when?
Great question. The majority of heart defects, congenital heart defects, inborn congenital heart defects, are discovered at or before birth. There's more and more prenatal detection of congenital heart defects these days, but certainly not all are caught before the baby's born. And then the majority will be discovered at or shortly after birth. About 10% of congenital heart defects, however, wait until they're not discovered until adulthood as well.
And as in the case of young people who are athletes, and we're going to talk a lot about these screenings, Dr. Price, but in the case of athletes who have sudden problems on the field, maybe some of them have experienced sudden death, unfortunately, are these people, young people who have had these defects for some time, just unknown to them?
Yeah, a lot of them are just playing their sport and are totally unaware. And often the first sign that they have something wrong is when they unfortunately keel over on the field.
And have they had this problem since birth in most cases or infancy?
Well, a lot of times they're born with that predisposition, but then as they age, for instance, the heart muscle, if there was a defect in it, will start to get worse. And then usually in their teen years is when it manifests itself.
And so there's no real – is there any kind of testing for that? I mean, you do screen for it, but, I mean, would it be normal for a person who's 17 years old or 16 years old to even be thinking about that, for their pediatrician to be thinking about that?
You know, I think we all think about it as pediatricians or primary care docs, but we don't have our traditional screening test of just doing their history and their physical exam. Mm-hmm. It misses a lot of these. If you look at all the kids in a study that have died of sudden cardiac death playing sports, not all of them, but in one study, only about 5% were caught with, you know, doing that traditional history and physical. And that's why we've tried to come up with better screening methods at our Heart of a Champion Day.
How many children are we talking about who were born with
It's the most common congenital defect, and it's almost 1 in 100 births.
Is that number staying steady? Is it rising? Is it falling?
The number is basically staying steady. It's been steady over the last couple of decades. Previous to that, there was an increased detection because the detection methods have been getting better and better.
Right.
But since the advent of the technology that we have now, the incidence rates have stabilized over the last couple of decades. So it's almost 1 in 100.
We're going to talk about Greg Olson's personal involvement in this because of his son. And he found out about his son's problem in utero before the child was born. Is that the normal course of events? And if so, why would you be looking for that, and how do you look for that in fetuses?
Yeah, that's becoming the more normal course of events, and certainly we are trying more and more to make it the normal course of events. There certainly are still children that are that have their heart defects not discovered prenatally. There are, in our program, as an example, we're making more and more effort to grow a fetal heart program, meaning increase our ability to detect these lesions in utero by having a program director for fetal cardiology, having our program director and our team go out and educate maternal-fetal medicine doctors and other specialists in our region so that the detection rates in the office for those specialists can increase, mm-hmm. and simply raising awareness and raising expertise and using the technology that enables the detection to happen.
Greg Olson is with us. He's a tight end for the Carolina Panthers, and he and his wife were expecting twin baby boys when they discovered that one of the children was going to have an issue. How was it discovered?
Yeah, so it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. We were at our routine 18-week sonogram, the so-called anatomy scan. We were excited about finding out the sex of the babies, and it was at that visit that the sonographer noticed something was wrong, and in one of the babies noticed that one of the sides of the heart looked a little smaller than the other, sent us immediately over to the Sanger Institute for further, fetal echoes and further exams, and that was when we received the diagnosis of hyperplastic left heart, and it was just as ordinary as an exam, and ordinary as a visit as my wife has had many times. And
how long have doctors been able to, at 18 weeks, look at a sonogram and say there's a problem here? How long have doctors been able to do that?
Well, that's that science and technology is advancing all the time. It's been quite good and quite sensitive for the last decade or more.
Had they not been able to do it, had this been 1955, what would have happened?
Well, taking it back to 1955, there would have been that was the very dawn of heart surgery at all, so there would have been no way to treat this.
Okay, we'll move it up. 1970.
speaking for hypoplastic left heart syndrome in particular, before 1980, there was no treatment for hypoplastic left heart syndrome, meaning every baby that was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome was expected to die before the age of 1 month. There was essentially 100% mortality by the end of the first month of age. In 1980, an operation was described by Dr. William Norwood, who at the time was in Boston, to deal with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, and the operation has taken its name, called the Norwood procedure. The operation, basically, since the left side of the heart isn't going to be big enough to do its job, we borrow the right side of the heart to do the work of both sides. Normally, the right side of the heart is supposed to pump the blood to the lungs where it gets oxygen, and the left side of the heart receives that oxygenated blood, and then its responsibility is to pump that blood to the entire body. So since in babies with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, we aren't going to have a left side that can do its job, we have to borrow the right side to do that job. And Dr. Norwood is the one who ultimately figured out how to do that. So in 1980, the first operation was described to deal with this. And in Dr. Norwood's original series, he described 16 patients that he had treated, and three survived.
We're talking about childhood heart disease today on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. How common is hypoplastic left heart syndrome?
There are about 1,000 babies born in the U.S. each year with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. That's out of about 40,000 babies that are born with congenital heart defects in the United States each year.
And what happens to the young people who are born with that, who go through the operation that Dr. Norwood designed, and what's their life like going forward?
Well, every baby with hypoplastic left heart syndrome will have to undergo a series of three operations, one at birth, one at about 6 months of age, and then another operation right at 3 years of age. After those three operations, the circulation is adapted as best we can to provide long-term survival. Our operations don't cure hypoplastic left heart syndrome, but they arrange the circulation so that your survival is maximized.
Since we are, medical advances seem to, they advance, in years to come. Will we be, if you can spot it at 18 weeks, will you be able to perhaps do something in utero that will correct the condition and allow the child to be born with a normal heart?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's certainly an area of active ongoing research. There are some, a couple of places in the world right now that are experimenting with in utero interventions to try to deal with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. That science is very young. The success rates are not great right now, but it's an area of active research.
How many congenital diseases or congenital defects are there that children can have?
Well, the number of congenital defects is probably in the with variations is in the order of hundreds. The last count of the number of different operations that I get asked to do, different types of operations, is about 150. And all of those are directed towards different versions of defects. So there's a tremendous variety.
And how many of these can be diagnosed before the child is born?
Almost all of them.
And is it advantageous to have that done before they're born?
It is advantageous in terms of making sure that the care of the mother is optimized, that if there are arrangements that need to be made for the location and the hospital at which the parents deliver the mother delivers the baby, if it needs to be in a center where heart surgery is available, all those arrangements can be made before the baby's born.
And how many of these congenital defects can be fixed before birth?
None of them can be fixed before birth. Hypoplastic left heart syndrome can, in an experimental situation, be addressed at birth, but it does not cure the defect.
Dr. Benjamin Peeler is the chief of pediatric cardiothoracic surgery at Carolina's healthcare system. We're going to come back with more of our conversation about childhood heart disease in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about childhood heart disease today with Dr. Benjamin Peeler, chief of pediatric cardiothoracic surgery at Carolina's Medical Center. Dr. Jorge Alegria, who is a cardiologist with Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute. Dr. David Price, medical director of Heart of a Champion at Carolina's healthcare system, which we'll talk about in a moment or two. And Greg Olson, who's a tight end with the Carolina Panthers, whose son was diagnosed in utero with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. You wanted to know the gender of the twin boys your wife was carrying.
Boy, girl.
Oh, boy, girl. I'm sorry. I thought
boy,
they were
girl.
Twin boys. But you wanted to know the gender of these infants ahead of time. I'm sure this is more than you bargained for when you found out that one of them had hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Did you want to know that? Is that something people should know or would want to know? What does that do to your world?
Well, I'm glad we wanted to know because we were able to find out that many weeks earlier than what our next routine sonogram would have been. So for that regard, we were happy that we were able to find out so early on at 18 weeks. You know, at the time when the news hit us, we for a while there said, well, I wish we didn't know, right? Because now we have to wait all these months of worrying and stressing and dealing with, but when things settled down, we had an unbelievable opportunity to gain information. And that's really what that period of time all was getting educated to what HLHS actually was, congenital heart defects in general. We had a chance to talk to other medical institutes around the world that specialize in this care, and it all led us back here to Charlotte and led us back here to Levine.
And you went to Boston.
We did. So as Dr. Peeler touched on in the last segment, there is a relatively experimental procedure, cardiac fetal intervention, that we actually tried to go up to Boston to see if we were candidates for. It had never been tried on twins. And what it does in general is it tries to open up those valves that are closed, which cuts off the blood circulation into that heart, which causes it to kind of atrophy and not to grow.
Mm-hmm.
We were not candidates. It didn't work out. They were worried about the health of our daughter, the twin, also the health of TJ, what went on to be TJ. And, you know, so it just was a complicated situation being twins, and his case, his isolated incident was a little too far developed to try to reverse it.
How old is he now, and how is he now?
He's doing great. The twins are about to be 17 months old. So they're up walking and happy and doing what normal babies should do. It's amazing.
What's his prognosis?
It's pretty good. He's had a few little minor bumps in the road over the last couple of months, but for the most part, it's been a great period, you know, of 6 to 8 months for us. He's been for the most part home. He's been out of the hospital. He has about a year or so until the next scheduled surgery, and it's been a great time for us to have all our children together and, you know, just be able to enjoy them as a family without a lot of hospital visits.
Now, he's a little boy.
Yep.
He's going to want to pick up the football at some point in his life. And with Daddy being a major football player in the NFL, he's probably going to have aspirations. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be in his future. Early on from the diagnosis and our talks with various, you know, experts in the field, that's something that early on, and it's funny – and not Dr. Peeler and his team, but when we went up to Boston, the first thing they told us, and you would have thought they were telling me the gravest of news, was that when they said that your son is not going to have a very extensive athletic career. And I look back on that at the time, and I'm like, it was so trivial. But to them, I guess, to parents and especially fathers, it's a major pill to swallow.
Particularly fathers in the NFL.
I guess, but to be honest with you, I really couldn't – be so trivial. I couldn't care less.
How do you tell him that?
You know, my wife and I have talked about it. We've stressed about it at times, and we just try to encourage him to do other things, right? There's a lot of things that can make children happy. There's a lot of activities. He can, you know, as a kid, we can play baseball. We can go ride bikes with his brothers. If his older brother wants to play football, then him and daddy get to go play golf. Like, there's a way to approach it, I think, psychologically and sociologically, that you can make him feel just as special doing other things, that he doesn't have to be a football player or a basketball player to have some – I don't think that's necessary to have that sort of self-esteem for a young kid.
You have said that what TJ has gone through in his first 8 months of life – this is an old quote – is more than any of us have gone through in a lifetime. It's got to be heartbreaking to watch a baby go through this because, as Dr. Peeler said, a child diagnosed with hypoplastic left heart syndrome has to go through at least 3 surgeries and very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking two-day-old baby that you just delivered, 2 days ago, mm-hmm. laying there in recovery room with his chest left open after he just underwent major open heart surgery. You know, life and death situation, and there he is laying there, you know, sedated and recovering with countless tubes and monitors and a team of specialists surrounding him, monitoring his every move, his every, you know, heartbeat, every, you know, everything you can imagine. It's hard, and as hard as it was for us, you know, it's harder to see him go through that. And the idea that, you know, that we went through early when we first got the news is, what did he deserve this for? You know, all of that normal emotions kind of came pouring out, but he's a strong-willed kid. That's what makes him a little bit of a handful. But, you know, he bounced back, especially from his second operation, about 6 months really fast. We went home in about 5-6 days. It's really remarkable how resilient these kids are.
We're going to talk, Dr. Alegria, as we go through here about congenital heart problems in young people and what they have to contend with as they go through life. But in a situation like this, what will TJ's life be like? What will he be able to do? What will he not be able to do? What does he have to watch out for going through into adulthood, etc.?
Right. So TJ will need lifelong medical care by physicians that know what they are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He will need to grow, you know, as healthy as possible, you know, with a healthy nutrition, physical activity. We'll need a long-term...
He should have physical activity.
Yeah, of mm-hmm. course. It's good for their heart. And then he will, you know, will need to follow with... Eventually, he will become an adult,
mm-hmm.
and he will need to be followed an adult congenital heart center by expert, you know, where there's expertise for adults with congenital heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
As we, over the last 5 to 6 decades, you know, with the development of congenital heart surgery, there's a growing population of survivors with congenital heart disease that reach adulthood. In the United States, there's more than 1 million adults with congenital heart disease. We think that around 500,000 have complex congenital heart disease. Most of them are not followed because they may have not been able to have insurance. They may think that they graduate from pediatric cardiologists because they were cured. So in some way, there's a huge need to provide lifelong care for those patients.
Well, that leads me to this question, which I was going to get to anyway, because Greg Olson, being in the NFL, probably makes a reasonable amount of money, at least while he's playing on the field, and probably has decent health insurance through the NFL and through the Panther organization. What happens to a person who doesn't have those resources?
Well,
that's a great question, and you can probably detect by the lack of immediate answers you're getting that that's a, you know, a very large question in our society right now. I think insurance for children that are becoming adults with congenital heart disease is a particular issue right now I think is pointing out some of the problems with our current reimbursement system. You know, right now, until you're 26, you can stay on your parents' health plan, which is a good thing, a good solution right now. But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there are a lot of questions about that because the care of these patients is ongoing. It can be expensive. Many of them are going to need more expensive care, meaning. Mm-hmm. Things like surgeries mm-hmm. and other devices and so forth. So, you know, I think, one, we certainly don't have the answers. And in many cases, the doctors, the ones that you have here, are following it, not leading it.
And that brings us back.
If I may.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I can shed a little light into when you talk about the insurance situation. When TJ was discharged from the hospital and we put in a claim that we would like to get some sort of in-home care provided for him, I mean, here's a kid who just a month earlier had open-heart surgery. He's on special feeding tube, special monitoring, special formula, all of that entailed. And we were denied that in-home coverage. The insurance company told us that TJ was not, as they claimed, sick enough to qualify and that they would not cover any of those treatments. If we wanted to do that, that would be something we'd have to take out of pocket. And just to give everyone an idea of the scope of medical care we're covering, I do have good health insurance, fortunately. But if you know, they pick up the majority of it, but not all of it. But if it wasn't for that insurance, you know, we're talking in a year and a half, including some of the prenatal care with my wife, probably approaching $1 million, if not very high, upwards of hundreds of thousands. And he's not even 2 years old yet.
Wow. Which brings us back to you again, because I was going to say, you've started something here. You have, you're a tight end for the Panthers, 73 receptions in 2013, broke your own reception record this season for a single season. And now you've started something called Receptions for Research, the Greg Olson Foundation. And you're wearing a shirt that says the Hardest, H-E-A-R-T-E-S-T, the Hardest Yard Fund. Are these two separate organizations or one and the same?
Okay, so Receptions for Research is our family's foundation. We have two parallel initiatives, and one of those programs being the Hardest Yard Fund, which is a fund hung at the Carolina Healthcare Foundation here in Charlotte, benefiting Levine Children's Hospital. And what it is, and it kind of ties into what we just talked about, when TJ was discharged from the hospital, and as a family, my wife and I thought after a couple days of being home with him that his care was a little above our, you know, expertise. It was a little too advanced, a little too complex that we felt comfortable handling, especially early on. That inner stage when the baby is discharged after surgery one and goes in for surgery number two about 4 to 6 months later, and Dr. Peeler can shed a little more insight on this, is their most critical time in their whole lives. It's where they it sets them up for either a smooth path towards coming out of that second surgery or can complicate things. And we brought in a nurse who lived with us at our house for about 4 to 6 months, a private duty pediatric nurse. She became part of our family, and the hospital and Dr. Peeler's team agrees, as we do, that she's a huge reason why he was able to really flourish during that time at home when he was in our care. So I approached Dr. Peeler about setting up a similar program, but instead of asking the families to pay for it, we would pay for it. And that's what the Hardest Yard program is. We're going to provide all babies upon discharge with HLHS from Levine Children's. We're going to provide them about 3 to 6 months of care, depending on how much they use and hours they kind of allocate. And they can customize that care to however they want in the home, from pediatric nursing around the clock, physical therapy, speech development, which for young children would be like oral feedings, which a lot of kids struggle with. And this service will be provided to them for free of charge. It'll be completely administered by the team at Levine's, but will be completely financed and paid for and entirely by my foundation and my family.
And where does that money come from?
It comes from myself a little bit, but it also comes from work that our foundation does. We have, you know, for example, we have an awesome event tomorrow that anybody in the Carolinas can participate in. If you just go have dinner at Chili's, any Chili's restaurant in the state, we've partnered with, and they're going to give 10% of tomorrow, March 18th's funds of sales to our fund. And in return, we just kick it right up to the hospital for them to make sure that they have the resources. We do, you know, we have various corporate sponsors that we've been able to partner with, and we do events, golf outings, you know, we go on and on. But we're very lucky. The people in Charlotte have been huge supporters of our family during this tough time. And we want them now to be supporters of this amazing children's hospital and in particularly this program.
This has the potential of helping how many families, do you think, Doctor?
Well, for starters, for our program, we take care of 15 to 20 patients with hypoplastic left heart syndrome per year. So it has, in the immediate time frame, has the capacity to help that many families in the near term. Our program is young and growing, so as time goes by, that number will increase. We also have some idea or some designs on perhaps expanding this program to other newborns that have heart surgery at our institution in the future, and that gets us closer to 75 to 100 children potentially. And then, you know, as we designed this program with Greg and Kara and have rolled it out and got experience with it, as we talk about it nationally, which we have at some of our meetings, I think this program has potential actually to spread nationally and help thousands of kids each year.
Dr. Benjamin Peeler is the Chief of Pediatric Cardiothoracic Surgery at Levine Children's Hospital at Carolina's Healthcare System. We're talking about congenital heart defects among children today on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. The good news, Dr. Alegria, is that children born today with congenital heart defects seem to have a better chance of surviving well into adulthood than they would have 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, but they will require ongoing care through life. There's usually a ceiling on an insurance policy. How does a person pay for that care? And how has the Affordable Care Act impacted that now that pre-existing conditions must be covered?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. I don't think we really know. I think the lack of insurance definitely has been a major negative thing for those patients because they were not able to follow. So I think the Affordable Care Act has opened a door to our patients, and we look forward to taking care for them.
But if they get care, if these young people get care through their lives, they have a chance of leading a relatively normal life. Is the same true of children who come to you as the result of the obesity problem, high blood pressure, high cholesterol levels in, you know, eight-year-olds leading to heart disease? Is the same true for them if they get their situation, their lifestyle situation, diet, exercise, et cetera, under control?
Regarding insurance, you mean?
No, just, you know, just in terms of their prognosis.
It's different. You know, I think adult congenital heart defects, just to give you an example, I have had patients that are 62 years old with complex congenital heart defects that have survived and have done productive lives. They have been blue, and so, but we also miss kids in their 15s or 20s with heart conditions related to diabetes, obesity, and hypertension. So if you ask me, I think it's completely different because we can prevent obesity. Also, there's a new emerging data that suggests that if the mother has obesity, there may be higher chances of having congenital heart defects for the kids. So it remains to be seen if the incidence will grow as the obesity epidemic continues to be growing.
But if a child has high blood pressure, high cholesterol, is overweight, does begin to exhibit heart problems because of that, if they lose the weight, if they get their blood pressure and cholesterol under control as they, you know, go through their teen years or their early adult years, are they liable to go through the rest of their life with no real problem?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to a very quiet Dr. David Price over there to talk about his area of expertise, which is the athletes, young athletes, football players and the like, who have an unknown problem that sometimes leads to sudden death on the field. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about childhood heart disease with Dr. Benjamin Peeler, Chief of Pediatric Cardiothoracic Surgery at Levine Children's Hospital, Dr. Jorge Alegria, who is a cardiologist with Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute, Dr. David Price, Medical Director of Heart of a Champion at Carolina's Healthcare System, and Panther tight end Greg Olson, who has a child with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. We were talking about insurance and all kinds of things prior to the break, and how this can be a monstrously expensive situation for people to get into. And because the prognosis, if it's caught early and treatment is available, is good for a long life with ongoing care, which requires ongoing insurance, it can be a problem. And Dr. Price, you wanted to chime in on that.
Well, I was just going to say, I think CHS, we see a lot of these folks who unfortunately haven't taken care of themselves and don't have insurance. And, you know, they think they're fine until all of a sudden they end up in the ER short of breath and they go, whoa, this person's messed up. Why didn't you come in? Why don't I have insurance? I think CHS does a real good job of linking them up with financial counselors, getting them some form of insurance, whether it's sliding scale, and then working with them to backdate that to try and get some of this stuff covered. And essentially, they write off a lot as well in doing that. But once they're hooked into the system at CHS, I feel like they're taken good care of.
I'm going to come back and talk about exercise and nutrition, and particularly young people who are exhibiting signs of obesity and what that means for their heart and their vascular system as they go through life. But it doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while we hear these horrible stories of young people, 17, 18 years old, 16 years old, who have come off a football field or a basketball court and just drop dead, sudden death syndrome. How many young people are, do you think, walking around like ticking time bombs who don't know that they have a problem but do?
Yeah, so it's a real interesting question. There's a lot of people that may have a congenital heart defect, but it's not one that could make them at risk for sudden cardiac death. Our job is to kind of identify those folks who are at risk for that, for keeling over on the field, and just allowing them to play safely. And so, you know, the estimates, unfortunately in the U.S., we don't have a mandatory reporting system. So over in Europe, you know, if someone dies, they have to report that. And part of that's because we don't have nationalized health care. Here, we go on a lot of these just optional reporting systems. But one of the good ones is the NCAA, which if someone dies while playing sports, they have to report it to the NCAA. And so incidence is kind of all over the place. Oh, there's only...
But what about at high school level?
So even in the high school level, I guess you can extrapolate. What they have shown is if you can make it to the next level, mm-hmm. you're less likely to have a problem that's going to kill you. You almost can kind of place out of that.
So you're saying that the problem is more critical at the high school and
we
junior
think
high
so.
School level.
We really do. We think so. And, you know, one of the recent studies on the NCAA showed that about 1 in 40,000 people were at risk for it. Mm-hmm. Well, then when you kind of narrowed it down to what actually happened with Division I basketball players that were African American, it was about 1 in 4,000. That's a big difference when you look at who's at risk. And so when I talked earlier about the history and physical kind of not really helping mm-hmm. in a lot of the times, we said, what can we do that can make a difference?
Are most of these problems arising from congenital problems that were undiagnosed and the athlete is unaware of?
You're exactly right. Almost all of them.
How much of it has to do, almost all of them? Mm-hmm. So not many have to do with diet or high blood pressure or high cholesterol.
No, it's a genetic problem, either an arrhythmia problem where their heart rhythm goes abnormal or more commonly a structural problem.
Why are these things not caught during routine physicals by a pediatrician or a general practitioner?
You just, you may hear a heart murmur, mm-hmm. but that would be about the extent of it. You know, if someone has a structural problem, it may not manifest itself on an exam. They may sound fine. And on the history, you're asking, you know, have you ever had chest pain? A lot of these people never have any problems until something happens, unfortunately.
Should all children, I mean, who want to play sports, have an EKG at some time before they are on a team? I mean, we're talking about Little League and Pee Wee and all that kind of stuff, middle school football, et cetera. Should they have an EKG before they start?
Well, so that's a big controversy. I personally think yes. And, you know, I think in the Europe and some of the other places around the world, they do. Now, what age do we do that? Usually you don't hear of someone having a problem until they're at least 9 years old, 10 years old. And then do you have to repeat it? But I think at some point, and that's what we do it at about the 9th and 10th grade level on these kids. And that will pick up most of the what's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is the most common cause of sudden cardiac death.
What is that?
That is a thickening of the heart muscle, that same muscle that Dr. Peeler brought up earlier that pumps all that blood to the rest of the body. It basically, the outlet for that gets obstructed. And so a kid starts working out at a high heart rate, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden that blood flow gets obstructed.
Do these kids who have sudden cardiac death, have they had symptoms that they could possibly have recognized in themselves had they known that they were having
symptoms?
That's
a great question. So our study, which actually is published this week, looked into that. So that we caught about five people. And when a lot of them, or of those, three of them said, well, yeah, I had a little bit of chest pain when I was doing this, but I thought everybody had that. And so even when you ask that on a history form, unless you clarify it, they think that's normal, just like their peers.
Right.
Dr. Allegri.
And as David said, you know, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is the most common cause. It's important to know the family history, too, because maybe if someone in the family that died, you know, suddenly in a car accident that nobody knew what happened. And when we talk about hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, it's a genetic condition, and the gene in the population is 1 in 500. Mm-hmm. Not all of them will have, sudden death. So, but the family history is very important.
You've been playing football probably since you were 10, 9, 8 years old.
Yep.
A long time. Did anybody in your young years, when you were in high school or college, ever take you aside or talk to you about your heart? Or did doctors take special care with you because you were an athlete?
I would like to say yes, but to be honest, no. I mean, growing up, everyone just assumed everything was fine. I mean, when we got to high school, we did, I guess, what you'd consider a physical, which was a doctor would kind of, you know, hit your knee and see if it reflexed and ask you questions. But, I mean, as far as any in-depth monitoring of your cardiovascular system, no. I mean, that was nothing. You know, maybe they put a stethoscope up and kind of made you cough and do all that. But, no, I mean, we just played and we didn't know any better. And, like, I think it's interesting. He talks about you know, I thought those chest pains were normal. I mean, you'd be surprised, even when you get up to the higher level of competition, where discomfort you just take as, yeah, I'm working hard, but this is part of the idea of being able to overcome that. And I think from a psychological standpoint, high school coaches, middle school coaches, it's, you know, fight through that, right? The old so-called stereotypical, especially in the football world, where, oh, you know, don't show weak, you know, that whole thing. I think people are starting to come out of that a little bit. I think people are starting to realize that this is not a barbaric, you know, group of people. Like, I think people are starting to say, okay, we need to be realistic here. If someone's showing symptoms, let's pull them aside. Let's check them out. I think those days of, you know, Bear Bryant taking everybody to Junction, Texas and making everybody die and stuff, I think those days are coming, hopefully are coming to an end.
Dr. Price, you conduct something at Carolina's healthcare system called Heart of a Champion Day. It's on May 31st this year, and you've had this before. It's a three-step screening process that clears young athletes to play. Who participates in this? Is this voluntary, or do all high schools get involved in this? How does this work?
So it's all – well, the one on May 31st, we've got four screening events in four different counties, but the one here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg is for all public – high school Charlotte-Mecklenburg athletes.
Do the coaches send these kids, or do they just say, gee, I think I'll go, or how does it work?
It's pretty awesome. We have a sign-up that takes place over a period of about a month, and, you know, we really encourage all the athletic directors for each of the high schools and the athletic trainers that we have put some athletic trainers in those high schools to encourage the kids to sign up.
And what kind of participation levels do you get as a result?
We get excellent. We screened about 1,500 athletes in one day, so you can imagine how many volunteers.
What kind of problems have you found? Because you've done this more than this.
This will be our seventh year.
Okay.
Maybe eighth.
Okay. What kind of problems have you found?
We have found two cases of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, one of which was severe, and several other conditions that could cause sudden cardiac death that were easily treated.
And you've used, I understand, this data that you've come up with over the last 7 years to help determine. Explain how you use it.
Yeah, so our whole goal, and besides, you know, looking to make sure these kids could play safely, just from a research aspect, we said, does it make sense to do an EKG on these athletes, and does it make sense to do an echo? So we started by doing EKGs, the heart tracing on everybody, and then we ended up doing echoes on all of those.
What's the difference in those two procedures?
So the EKG is the heart tracing on the top of the chest.
That's where they put the little leads on your chest and your arm and maybe your leg, and it's completely non-invasive. It doesn't hurt at all.
And it's cheap. It's cheap. Yeah. You know, if you look at an echo, which is the ultrasound, just like you ultrasound for a baby or something, the ultrasound's a lot more expensive for an echo, and although not much more with the amount of technology that's come out. But what we found was we caught a lot of things with EKG, and they were the serious ones.
So do you give these kids who come to Heart of a Champion Day both the EKG and the echocardiogram?
We did originally, and then we only started doing the echo if their EKG was abnormal or they had something in their history or family history that suggested.
This is a three-stage process. There's a general medical screening, including vision checkup, orthopedic screening for knees and spine and other joints and bones, I suppose, and then the cardiac screenings as well. Are you finding a lot of problems other than cardiac problems that you didn't know about?
No, it's interesting. I think everyone would agree. Once you hit about high school or 10 years old, you quit seeing that pediatrician when you stop needing your shots. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think everybody needs that. They're well child checked. But the reality is, you know, I used to go out to these high schools just like Greg did, had done, and myself too growing up. And I'd lay a stethoscope on there and, you know, it'd be loud. And I'm like, am I really letting this kid play safely? Is this really good? The kid's back there filling his paperwork out. And so we just standardized that. And this has been a great catchment to get kids into the system.
Now, as I understand it, physical is required by the state of North Carolina before a student can compete in, what, high school football, high school basketball?
Any sport.
So how is this different from that requirement that they
get
a
physical? It's the same thing. It's the same one. So if they went to their pediatrician, they would get that screening, just they wouldn't have the EKG with it. And it's just more comprehensive. And actually, as a parent, you feel much more reassured.
Is there a charge for this?
It's free.
What if you're not a high school athlete? What if you're just a kid and your mom wants to get you checked out? Can they enroll you in that?
You can't do that way. Okay. But what we're doing is teaching pediatricians now all over the country how to interpret EKGs in athletes. And pretty soon, I think we're going to have the computers that do the automatic interpretation or overread to really do some of the screening too. And
because it's the reading of the EKG, not the taking of it, that is.
That's exactly right. Because athletes' EKGs look far different than someone who doesn't play sports.
Really?
And that's the difference. Yeah.
We're talking about childhood heart disease on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. How do they look different?
Well, a lot of things that would be abnormal. For instance, you know, something like on an EKG that you would, if you didn't take care of athletes, you'd be like, that person's definitely got a heart abnormality, right? And then for the average doctor looking at it, if you've been trained in looking at these EKGs in athletes, you go, oh, that's fine. Mm. And knowing that difference is critical.
So your screening is May 31st, 2014, and the event at Chili's to raise money for your heart.
Hardest Yard.
Hardest Yard is tomorrow, yep. March the 18th, 2014. High blood pressure, food intake, exercise, these are all problems that lead to heart problems as we go through life if we don't take care of ourselves. Our kids growing up, if they catch it now, how can I say this? Kids are invincible. They don't think that they're going to die and nothing's going to hurt them. So when you talk to a kid who is grossly overweight and you talk to them about their heart, do they listen? Do they hear you? Do they understand it? Is it just too much to ask a kid to change his complete lifestyle?
Well, I think kids are much more flexible than adults, so they will listen. And when we talk about prevention of cardiovascular disease, we need to start with the family. We need to start with what we're cooking at home, what we're eating, and also physical activity. And by physical activity, I think it's very important in general that we don't only think about sports. We can talk about what we call the non-exercise aspect of physical activity. So we sit too much, you know. In average, in the United States, we sit down 10 hours a day. So we suffer sitting disease. Our kids are suffering sitting disease at school. So we could change the school environment where they can stand up, you know, change the cafeteria. So we have a great opportunity to change cardiovascular disease.
I want to end with some good news. The Congenital Heart Center at Levine's Children's Hospital has a full spectrum of procedures, and as I understand it, your outcomes are among the best in the nation after only 3 years. I have 30 seconds. How do you account for that?
I think it has a lot to do with our team. It has a lot to do with Carolina's healthcare. You know, I came here after 4 years ago after the new Children's Hospital was built in 2007. And it served as a catalyst with Carolina's healthcare support for bringing in some of the best people in the country around to build our congenital heart team. And that has everything to do with why we've been able to be so successful.
Dr. Benjamin Peeler, Chief of Pediatric Cardiothoracic Surgery at Levine Children's Hospital. Dr. Jorge Alegria, cardiologist with Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute. Dr. David Price, Medical Director of Heart of a Champion, Carolina's healthcare system. And Greg Olson, tight end for the Carolina Panthers. Go Panthers. Good luck next season without Steve Smith. Come back and talk about that.